Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. So look, as I've been saying, the most important march, and I love the fact that so many people are out marching in the streets, the most important march is going to come November on the 6th when we march to the polls and we throw the bums out. And at the end of this, you know, what we've been talking about with yesterday's, whatever that was in Helsinki, and today's whatever that was, on the, you know, there are other people hacking us too. We need sanity. We need rational thought. We need people with a vision. We need patriots. We need people who are going to stand up, step forward, and speak out and move us in the right direction, which is why every day on this program we try and reach out to candidates. And today we're going to take a look at Michigan's 11th congressional district. Sunil Gupta is running in that district. That's why I've got Sunil on the line. Sunil, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, good to be here. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate the time. Right from the start, first question I ask every candidate, why would you do this to yourself?
Rick, I mean, I am someone who has been a lifelong Democrat ever since I was a kid. This district that I have grown up in has always been red. I used to make my dad drive me a half hour to another district so I could go stuff envelopes and knock on doors for John Dingell instead of working for anybody that lived around me. It is time. It's time for us to flip this district from red to blue. And there's never been a more important time to do that than right now with what's happening in the country.
Now, you've taken an interesting position, because I'm looking at your website and, you know, you're one of the few candidates that I've seen that's actually going directly after Trump. The Conor Lamb model was not to even mention his name. You're going right after him. Why do you think that's a good strategy?
Well, I mean, it's my strategy because I think it's the right thing to do. I mean, I think not enough people right now are standing up to Donald Trump. I think that you have a lot of people who are who disagree with him. And people are being too quiet. And I think that we need more people who are standing up to him directly and saying, look, what you stand for and the tone that you're creating in this country is not the tone that we believe in. I mean, look, you know, my mom was a refugee. She got a public education, and in 1967, she became Ford Motor Company's first female engineer. And, I was born and raised right here in this district with sort of the mentality that we all belong. That if you work hard, you play by the rules, there'll be a place for you. There'll be an opportunity for you. That's how I grew up, and that's what I believe. But I think right now what we're seeing is a complete change in tone, where more and more people are feeling like they need to look a certain way, act a certain way, behave a certain way, make money a certain way, pray a certain way in order to belong. And I'm running because I believe that that is Donald Trump's America. That's not our America.
Yeah, and I would argue it's the guy you're running against is David Trott, who looks like, you know, just the cookie cutter right wing, you know, anti same sex marriage, anti healthcare, pro gun, you know, anti choice Republican that you would expect to come out of the right wing machine.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that. I mean, if you look at the person who has raised the most money, I should say, on that side, in that primary, it was Donald Trump's co-chair, third generation oil money, big vocal supporter of the NRA, was a supporter of what we were seeing at the border a couple of weeks ago, came out publicly to support that. It is basically an extension of Donald Trump and his values. And that's what we're going to be up against this November.
So let's talk about what you're in favor of, because, you know, there are issues that candidates that bring them into an election. There are things that their vision, their, you know, something that happened to their life. What's that issue that Sunil Gupta goes, you know what, I'm not moving on. This is the issue I die on.
Yeah, it's health care. It's health care. So my mom is a cancer survivor. My dad was diagnosed with diabetes before I was born had his first triple bypass surgery when he was in his 40s. So, you know, I grew up watching them go through a lot and you know, watching doctors and nurses do amazing things to help them get them to better health. We were lucky. We had decent insurance. But then both my parents lost their auto jobs. They were in the auto industry for over 30 years, and then they both lost their jobs in a single day, just like that. And I watched them worry, and I watched them worry about their health care. And I watched the same thing happen to my friends and my neighbors, and health care has always sort of been a passion of mine. I come from a science and technology background. You know, I've spent my time inside Democratic politics, but I'm a computer programmer, and I took everything I learned in science and tech, and I applied it to healthcare. So I started up a service that was giving people in remote areas access to a clinically trained provider right over their mobile phone. And by doing that, we were reaching patients that didn't have access to care. We were delivering that care at an affordable rate. We partnered with Michelle Obama to deliver to lower income communities around the country. And, you know, that's been my proudest work. And I'll tell you, Rick, I mean, honestly, the thing that scares me the most is that, you know, generations from now, I don't want people to look back on us and say, yeah, let me get this straight. You created the most advanced healthcare system in the world, and yet you could not find a way to provide quality basic care to everyone. I simply don't think that that is a fate that we can accept. I believe that healthcare is a right and that we have to march boldly towards affordable healthcare for all.
And I think that's the divide between Democrats and Republicans, because a lot of my Republican friends, they have this belief that it's a privilege, that there are the deserving and the undeserving, as opposed to what you just laid out, that everyone should have that right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, life being first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. I mean, I think that, you know, what I have found, you know, we've been running a really strong ground game here in Michigan. We've knocked on nearly 22,000 doors now as a volunteer workforce, and just you know, working together to make it happen. And I think what we find is that, you know, you're right, there are differing points of view, but I think fundamentally we do agree more on things than we give credit for. I think this is less of a fight between Democrats and Republicans, and I think more of a fight between everyday people and the corporate special interests that are out there. I mean, for example, I think 92% of Americans believe that the government should be able to use its collective bargaining power to reduce the price of prescription drugs. We have over 40 million people that are part of Medicare Part D. We should be able to band together and negotiate a better price. I think nearly everybody agrees with that. But we have a few powerful people in D.C. That are preventing and have prevented that from happening. And we need more people out there pounding the pavement for what's right.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing, and then I'll push back on that a little bit, in that, you know, I still see it as a Democrat and Republican issue, because, you know, I do remember the Obama years. And while I wasn't a huge fan of the Affordable Care Act, the Republicans did try to repeal it like a gazillion times. And even, you know, yeah, one of the first things they did when Trump took power, they tried to repeal it again. So to me, you know, this kind of is a political fight in that vein, which is why I think Democrats should be taking a stronger stand. Personally, I'm a Medicare for all guy, or something better than that. But I still see it as a political divide.
Yeah, I think that you're certainly right. I mean, there are people out there who I think don't want to hear sort of the path that I think we can absolutely take to get to healthcare for all. As soon as you start having a conversation about it, they immediately fall into sort of, I think, the narrative that they hear, that their taxes are going to go up, their premiums are going to go up. And the reality is that with enough experienced people inside Congress who really have worked, with hands-on healthcare experience, that are problem solvers, not necessarily politicians, but problem solvers, I think we can get this done. Yeah. And I think, you know, making sure that we hold the prescription drug companies accountable, making sure that we can drive prices down is step one. And step two, honestly, is that, you know, I've learned a tremendous amount from working inside the healthcare space and delivering real care to real patients. And one of the things I've learned is that, you know, 5% of patients represent 50% of the cost in this country. And a lot of that 50% is preventable disease. You know, we wait for people to get sick before we actually take care of them. And by doing that, it drives up costs for everybody. If we were to reorient ourselves towards a preventative care, more proactive care model, where we're actually taking care of people before they actually get diagnosed with hypertension, before they get diagnosed with diabetes, not only could we meaningfully improve the quality of life and productivity for millions of Americans, but we dramatically reduce the cost. And if we go towards a model like that, where we're actually taking care of people before they get sick, we can get to healthcare for all. I know that.
No, I'm with you. But, you know, how do you get to that point? I mean, look, I was looking about your company, Rise, and the things that you did there. And I think it's great. It's great work. And it's that future technology that's going to get people access to some care where they may not have had it. Or, you know, the simple stuff. Like, you know, I get an upper respiratory infection every year. I don't smoke. I've never had, for some reason, it's just what it is. I get a little antibiotic and I'm cleared up in a couple of days. Should I have to wait a week to get a doctor appointment and go through all of that where there should be something simpler and cheaper? I don't know.
No, absolutely. It should be simpler and it should be cheaper. I mean, you know, oftentimes, you know, we are using technology for sort of the industries and problems that sometimes need it the least. And we sometimes are laggards and we're behind on some of the problems that need it the most. And I think healthcare is an example of that. You know, there's no reason why, you know, the hospitality industry with Airbnb or the transportation industry with Uber should be ahead of real fundamental problems like healthcare and education. You know, we need to be bringing that type of, you know, inventive thinking into, you know, the problems that I think working families are facing. But in order to do that, we definitely need, you know, new types of thinking inside of Congress. You know, like I said, I'm not a politician. I'm a problem solver, but I know how to solve complex problems. And that's what my background is, and that's what I want to bring to the people of this community.
No, look, I wish you the best. I hope we need more problem solvers instead of destroyers, and it seems like our political system right now set up with a bunch of destroyers who have special interests at heart. And you're right. A big part of our healthcare problems are the special interests and the lobbying money that's in it. And bringing to that point, I mean, money is a huge problem in our politics. Is there a way you foresee us getting away from this? Because I don't see any path forward when guys like you have got to run on begging for money from people to run for elections, when, you know, a congressman are spending, you know, 2 years begging for dollars to run for re-election. I just don't see a path forward given that model.
Well, I think you're laying out an important problem for sure. I mean, you know, look, I mean, the average household in Michigan has around $150 of disposable income, and yet companies like, you know, Goldman Sachs and Nestle and Amway can spend $150 million to influence an election. You know, and when that happens, you're right. It's hard. It's hard. But we have decided to take the hard path and to say, look, we're not going to accept a dime of corporate interest, special interest money in this race. We're going to be fueled by individuals. And, you know, when we made that pledge, we were told that we were crazy, but, you know, we have done it, and we have become the first Democrat to outraise every Republican in this race, 100% with individual money. And so that's been a proud sort of thing for us. And I think we set the example for others to do the same and to believe that it is possible. And I think over time, we can have enough people that I think really care about that principle enough to reverse the tide of Citizens United, which I think has just set our country back in a major way.
You know, one of the things that I ask, you know, I'm a labor guy. I'm someone who believes that every worker should join and form unions, and should have the right to collective bargaining. What we're seeing going on across this country, and especially with Donald Trump in the White House and Republicans in control of the House and the Senate, is this attack on people's abilities to join and form unions and collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions. Is that an issue that you know, is something that you would be willing to push forward in Congress? Because, you know, there are a bunch of pieces of legislation right now. I think the Workplace Fairness Act is something that's been banging around. There's a couple of things. Is that something you'd sign on to?
100%. I mean, making sure that unions and people's ability, workers' ability to organize and to speak for their own interests is upheld and strengthened is a huge priority for me. I mean, look, I'm a data guy, and I can see the data. When union density was high in this country, the middle class was strong. You know, the people could send their kids to college. They could get the care they needed when they were sick. They could buy, you know, a comfortable home. And every attack against collective bargaining is an attack on working families and the middle class.
Yeah, I look at, you know, in reading your story, I think that plays out in your experience. I mean, your parents come out of the auto industry where union density was very high. Back when the unions were very strong and the audio industry was still here, you had good paying jobs where parents could send their kids to college, where you could maybe get by on one income. And I know there are a lot of people, you know, who say that that's not possible again. I'd like to believe that, you know, the future jobs could be good paying jobs. They don't all have to be poverty wage jobs.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the people who are sort of promoting the narrative that that's not possible are the same people who are promoting the narrative that, you know, we don't have the funding anymore to really invest in the middle class. We don't have the funding to take care of our roads and our infrastructure. We don't have the funding to protect Medicare, to protect Social Security, to invest in public schools. It's all wrapped in the sort of the same narrative. But then those same people, you know, turn around and vote and lobby for a multi-trillion dollar tax break for the richest of the 1% and for the largest of the corporations. I mean, you know, Verizon, Boeing, General Electric, all together paid zero last year in federal taxes. So again, I think that we can invest in workers, we can invest in families, we can invest in our roads and our schools and protect our seniors. But I think it's going to take making sure that everybody's paying their fair share.
Yeah, at the end, we should look, we're the richest country in the world at its richest point in history. We should be able to do better than we are. Last question I've got. What's the argument to vote for Sunil Gupta? What are you telling people in the 11th district there in Michigan? What's the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, I've lived this family, I've lived this district story. Yeah, you know, my family came here and you know, was lucky enough to get jobs in the auto industry. Worked there for 30 years. Went through the same layoffs that 700,000 people in this district went through. I know what people are worried about today, and I've gone out there and solved the problems, particularly in healthcare, that we need to solve in order to fight for working families. And that's exactly what I'm going to do in Congress.
Well, I wish you the best. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again as you continue down the path towards primary and election day. Sunil, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you so much, Rick. Appreciate it.
Good stuff.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Again, you want to check out his website, sunilgupta.com is the website. We'll get links out so folks can take a look, maybe throw him a buck or two, because, look, the corporate money thing, very, very, very hard to overcome. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.